Thank you, Jesus. Hallelujah. Praise you, Lord. Lord, I just pray that you will take this message and bring revelation into the heart of everyone. Lord, I pray that you'll bring a great victory over the enemy in this message. Jesus, we desire your will for our lives and to fulfill your calling and your plan. Lord, may this be a tool to further that end. In Jesus' name. This morning I'm bringing a lesson that is emphasizing one point. And I might not qualify everything that needs qualifying. And so I would like to say that I am not teaching anything new at all. And what I'm teaching is very simple. And so if anything should seem a little bit strange to you, you qualify it with all of the truth and all the sermons that you've been taught in this body. In no way is this anything new or contradictory to anything else. It's just a point that I feel is important. The title of my Sunday school lesson is At the Cross. At the Cross. I knew of a man who got saved some years ago. And this man is no longer living, by the way, and this is a true story. I've tried to bring this as accurately as I can. His salvation was a work of God. While listening to his first sermon, God shone his light upon his mind, and instantly he knew that it was all true. That was not enough, however, because he was still bound by certain things in this world. He continued to attend church and to hear the Word of God. And sometime later, while singing a hymn in church, God sovereignly manifested his love to him. And he had not cried a tear since the first grade, and yet suddenly he was broken before God, surrendering all. He immediately changed the entire course of his life. Whatever life that he had left, he committed to the Lord. As he continued to walk with the Lord, his Christian life was full of blessing. God was very gracious. God was very real to this man. And some years later, God acted again and revealed something else to him. This time he revealed that Satan was going to try to destroy him. He showed him that he was a target for satanic attack and that he must walk very carefully. And living in the midst of blessing, it did not seem possible, but a revelation is just that. It was immediately seen to be true and very clear. God also revealed several of the ways in which this would come. These were noted, and dedication and commitment was made to eliminate those things from being open doors to Satan. Years continued to pass, and his life was continually blessed. Then Satan came and began to take advantage of every circumstance that he could. He shook and shook, and he felt like a rag doll that was being shaken in a great storm. He began to experience all manner of negative emotion and continual pressure to the point of being physically sick. At first, he was confused. It was totally foreign to his entire Christian life. There was no answer as to what this was or where it came from. And it took a while, but eventually he recognized that this was the devil come to shake him. And there were two possibilities. Either Satan was bringing this by God's permission, as with Job, or Satan was coming as the result of an open door in his life. Because there are many trials that are a Christian's own immaturities and fault. Now, the answer to this question was never really found out. And the only thing to do was pray for revelation and close doors. However, no revelation came. A number of questionable doors were closed just to be on the safe side. And anything that seemed to be an open door to the devil was immediately dealt with. Everything was kept completely in the Lord's hands. But there was no change in anything during this entire time except continual satanic attack. And after several years of this onslaught, he began to lose his will to live. The constant lies of Satan, illustrated by every circumstance and punctuated by every kind of emotion, left very little to live for. It seemed that living was very difficult. Now, suicide, of course, was completely untenable and was not a part of his vocabulary. But instead, he was swallowed up by a deep despondency. And depression was a common thing. Outwardly, the change was very slight, and no one knew anything. He lived in Dothan, but could see no chariots of fire. And this all took about 3 years, or maybe a little longer. And then the Lord moved again. He had not answered for a long time. And as always, it was totally unexpected, but God moved. And he said, "This is the open door to satanic attack in your life." He said, "You are the door to satanic attack. And to close that door, you must go to the cross." And of course, it was so obvious. It was so easy to see in that moment. And at that moment, everything was different. Everything. You see, God allowed him to come to the cross by the Spirit of God. And I'm speaking this morning on what it is like being at the cross. This is not a theological treatise. It's just a description of what it's like. What will it be like when you are at the cross? I don't fully know, but I may be able to help you and describe to you what it will be like in some areas. We read that Jesus said, "Not my will, but thine be done." And in Luke 22, he was in a great agony in verse 43 and 44. "And there appeared an angel from heaven and strengthened him. And he sweat, as it were, great drops of blood. But he said, 'Not my will, but thine be done.'" Coming to the cross is never easy. Man by nature lives for himself. He is keenly and intimately aware of his every need and want. He goes from birth to the grave, living to fulfill his own desires and goals. And self-preservation is one of the strongest instincts there is. To give everything to God is extremely difficult. And yet people do, in a measure, at salvation. And also during their Christian walk, they continue to give unto the Lord. But all too often, the measure of self that remains is in the largest percentage of the life of that individual. We try to come to the cross. We say we'll come to the cross. We profess to come to the cross. We testify that we are at the cross. But we lack the real understanding of what life will be like when we're really there. Indeed, it can be most shocking. Being at the cross is at best an abstract concept. When it is truly not my will, but thine be done, everything will be different. It is the hardest thing for the soulical man to do, and it is the thing that separates Christianity from every other religion. The cross represents pain and suffering, but I'm here to tell you that it is the greatest joy and peace that you can ever, ever know. The cross represents death, but it is the most blessed, abundant life you will ever find. Temptation is different when you're at the cross. When it is not my will, it is hard for Satan to entice you. You can still feel all of the pull, all of the desire, the tremendous pressure may be there. But since you are no longer interested in your own pleasure, your own satisfaction and gratification, fulfillment is totally irrelevant to what your course of action is going to be. The only important thing is, Lord, what is your will? What is your will? We read that man should not live by bread alone. That is, he should not live by the bodily wants. That is not how he should live. He should not live by what he wants, both body and soul. He should live by every word of God, which is the will of God. That's all that means. Here, turn this stone into bread. You're hungry. You're very hungry. Come on. Hunger has nothing to do with whether or not that stone should be turned into bread. It's not my will. My will is that it be turned into bread and that I eat it immediately. But it isn't my will. It doesn't matter. I'm not even concerned. The only important thing is that what is God's will? My needs, wants, desires weigh nothing as far as my actions will go. I will no longer let my hands and feet be directed by my own lusts, ambitions, wants, and needs. From now on, it is His will. Do you want to find God's will for your life? Then lay down your own will. It's simple. You can still be severely tested. Satan will fill you with unbelievable emotion. Fill your eyes with mirages that look good. But there is such safety in not my will, because you will not be motivated to act upon your own will. And so the mirages and poles cannot direct your life any longer. Satan cannot direct you by temptation any longer, because it isn't your will. What you want means nothing. You only want his will. Satan, your offer sounds good. All the kingdoms of this world. Think of it. Now, some people would say, oh, that isn't a temptation to me. My friend, it is. And you are living it in many subtle ways. All the kingdoms of this world is a tremendous temptation that no man can face. And Satan isn't offering it to you either. God won't let him, because you'd take it that fast. God won't let him offer you what you're unable to bear. All the kingdoms of this world, however, since it's not my will, even if I willed it, it would not move me. It wouldn't matter if I wanted it or not. His will is that I decline. Whatever emotional drawing there is irrelevant to my actions. Don't you want all the kingdoms of this world? Yes, I do. I'm not naive, my friend. I do. But I don't make decisions based on my will. My will is secondary to what I shall act and do. I am not saying you can never enjoy anything anymore. His will is that you eat, sleep. His will is that you be satisfied, loved, secure, blessed. That is His will. And if you'll lay down your own will, you'll find it. I guarantee it. I am only saying that our desires have nothing whatsoever to do with our decisions and should not conflict with them whatsoever. When it's not my will, trials are different. It is no longer important how hot the fire is. That is completely irrelevant. The only important thing is that your feet be walking in the footprints of Christ while you are in that fire. It's no longer important that you're suffering. Now, suffering is common in this life. Disappointment comes to all. But that is irrelevant. It is not my disappointment, Lord, but your disappointment that is important. Not my disappointment. My disappointment is irrelevant. At the cross, there is no difference between pain and pleasure. My will is pleasure. But it isn't my will, so either is fine. As long as it's your will. There's no difference to me. Pain or pleasure, there's no difference. As long as it's His will. At the cross, you are no longer subject to tremendous emotional upheaval. You can be in a tornado of emotion. Contrary and negative. But the only important thing is how you handle it, because you are first and foremost centered on His will being done in your life. And His will be done in your life as you very carefully walk those steps in that fire. There is no such thing as complaining at the cross. Complaining is saying, not your will, Lord, but mine be done. I don't like what is happening. But wait a minute. It isn't my will. So what I like is irrelevant. It doesn't mean anything anymore. It is only your will that is important. And as long as I'm in it, you shall never hear a voice of complaint from me. Now, I am not talking about suffering outside of God's will. If you're outside of His will, my friend, you're not at the cross. So leave that suffering and come to His will. But there is suffering that's common to all. At the cross, there's perfect patience. Impatience is my will not being done or taking too long. Patience is not being concerned with my wants, only His. And as long as they're being done, I am at total peace and total patience. As long as God's will is being done in my life, I am completely at peace. And I'm not impatient in any way. I am only concerned with the Lord's wants and His will for my life. I am only interested in Your will, Lord. If that is true, you will be at perfect peace no matter what comes your way, as long as it is His will. At the cross, there's no discouragement. Discouragement is your expectation not coming to pass. Disappointment is your will not being fulfilled. But it's not your will, so you could never be discouraged or disappointed. Lord, it hasn't happened to me yet. Are you in His will? Then, if it hasn't happened to you yet, be at peace. Be at peace. Because His will is being done. And that's all that matters. If you're walking in His will be being done. How can you be disappointed in the fulfillment of His will? Lord, I can't receive Your love. Go to the cross, my friend. God's will is that you receive His love. And if His will is being done, you will receive it. There is no rejection at the cross. Rejection comes from selfishness. Rejection comes from an expectation of the receiving of love or the acceptance of others that was not fulfilled. Expecting someone to come and love you and they did not. Oh, I'm rejected. They didn't give to me. They didn't meet my need. They didn't minister to my heart. I was rejected. I wanted them to make me feel good, Instead, they didn't. Now, Christ was rejected, but carried no pain or sorrow over it. Yes, he was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, but not over himself. Not over his own pain, not over his own rejection. That was not his pain. His pain was their suffering because of their rejection of him. That was his pain. Very few understand this about the life of Christ. It was not the fact that they did not minister to Christ and accept him as the Messiah that caused him pain and rejection and sorrow. It was that he wept for them as what would happen to them as they headed into the lake of fire. My friend, that was his pain. The fellowship of his sufferings is more than you suffering pain. It is when you begin to suffer over others' pain. It's when you begin to suffer unselfishly and not selfishly. It's when you begin to suffer for sinners that are going into the lake of fire, not because they are rejecting you, but because they are rejecting him. And your heart is indeed carrying the grief. And a man of sorrows, not over himself, but over others. Jesus was the most unselfish man that ever lived. It is incredible that such a man could live. I have never gotten over the impact of his life. Such an unselfish life. If you want to understand everything that he said or did, view it in total unselfishness, then you'll see it. Some people still view him as praying for himself and all this. My friend, and Christians doubt his love. He hurts for you when you doubt his love. He hurts for you when you can't receive his love. He hurts for you when you walk in unbelief and don't receive him. He's not hurting for himself. He hurts for you. And then people can't but receive his love. My friend, he wants to give you his love. At the cross, you will be safe from all hurt. You may still experience hurt, but an unselfish hurt can be carried. It won't devastate you. It won't be a tremendous emotional turmoil and burden. Unselfish hurt can be carried because the Lord walks with you in that hour. And the hurt is irrelevant in that you don't live for your own will or your own pleasure or your own fulfillment. You wish it weren't so, but your will is secondary. I'm not saying it's God's will that you were hurt. It isn't. It isn't God's will that you were hurt. But as we bear the fellowship of the sufferings, we will experience the hurt of the enemy and of men. The only thing that is important now is that how you take each step and that you bring that hurt to the Lord. If you are more interested in seeing God's will being done than the hurt being removed, God's will be done and the hurt will be removed because it is his will. It's his will to heal all hurts. At the cross, your marriage will be different. In any trouble, you will say, Lord, forgive me for my selfishness. Forgive me for my selfishness. I come to the cross in this moment. Immediately. Not my will, but my spouse's be done. Coming to the cross is not a one-time thing. It is not that I was there in 1953. Coming to the cross is something that must be done in every situation, but it must be a habit. It must be a pattern. You must set it in motion for it to work. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 15:31, I die daily. I die daily. I have to renew my dedication, commitment to come to the cross and to be totally unselfish. In every situation, I may have to die hourly to keep abreast of the situation and circumstances. At the cross, there is joy beyond expectation. You will never know the joy that potentially is yours until you come to the cross. Paul said in Philippians 1:21, "For me to live is Christ, not self." For me to live is Christ. There's no greater joy. Circumstances are irrelevant. Satanic pressures cannot move you. You can stand on the mount while Satan hurls a hurricane into your face until your clothes shred from the wind. And being free of your own will, you can't be moved. You're free of your own will. Oh, the glory and honor of choosing His will. The joy that you bring Jesus as you hold to His will in the test and storm, you will share. There is no greater joy than hearing Him say, "Well done, my daughter. Well done, my son." There is no greater joy. Such pure joy could never be found in the pursuit of self. Self being filled with the ultimate in all that this life offers could never bring anything near the joy of hearing Him say, "Well done." At the cross, you can leap for joy in the hottest furnace. Satan may have you bound, and demons may be dancing the victory all around you. The emotions may be overwhelming. The hopelessness of circumstances, continual past failures. Worst of all, the silence of heaven. My friend, He sees you down there. His eyes are as a flame of fire. Are you only interested in what feels good? Or are you interested in His will? His will is more important than anything you'll ever go through in this life. Can you see His joy when you stand in faith? When you choose to follow Him and say, "Though He slay me, yet will I do everything right. Yet will I trust Him. Yet will I obey." As Satan attacks, the discomfort is a mere inconvenience of the moment. The only important thing is how you order your steps. Your attitude will be love and thanksgiving, and you will truly be able to anoint your head and wash your face. People will ask you, "How are you doing?" You can always say, "Fine." Wonderful. And it's true. Because you're only interested in His will, and my friend, when His will is done, you are doing fine and wonderful. As long as you are doing His will to the best of your ability, there is nothing more wonderful than that. How you feel is irrelevant. Don't even ask yourself. It has nothing to do with the day's activities, or God's truth, or God's will. The only thing is where your feet walk. The only thing is that Jesus is in every action, every gesture, every tone, expression, thought. Well, what if I haven't felt His love? Did you know that you were never put on this planet for your own pleasure? We read in Revelation 4:11 that all things are created for His pleasure. So what does your pleasure have to do with it? His pleasure is all there is for me. But, lucky you, His pleasure is to reveal His love to you. Just realize, you can't miss. Because the cross will allow His will to be done in your life, and His will is to bless you exceeding. Unfortunately, the way to find the cross is through suffering. I don't know of any other way. That is, when your own will becomes so abominable, you will be willing to trade it for His will. And the best thing I can say is, make the commitment daily and try to carry it out by the Spirit of God. God will enable you by a divine act of grace to truly from your heart say, not my will, but thine be done. It can never be done any other way. The human being could never do it except by a miracle of God's grace. And everything will be different. It's like the most mighty deliverance you will ever get. A deliverance from self. You will be immune to self-pity. Self-pity is a neon sign saying, I am not at the cross, and boy. It's the same thing. Negativism will flee from you. Trials will look so small. Instead of being locked in to your own self-reference point where you look out through every emotion and your judgment is colored by the constant emotions. See, this is where man is. In himself, he has to look through all of his feelings and the circumstances and his judgment is colored by it and he can't see clearly. He can't think clearly because he's looking through the emotion of it all. Coming to the cross allows you to stand outside of yourself and look. Because now the reference point is God, not you. You can look with God's perspective upon your life and upon all that you go through and walk with such freedom and joy. The motivation to do right is incredible at the cross. Things are no longer interpreted in relation to self or in relation to what feels good. They're only interpreted in relation to Him. King Hezekiah had an experience one time. And he ended up in a trial. He was king of Judah during very blessed days. God blessed him abundantly. He was rich. And we read of the blessing and the wealth that came into the nation. But the Assyrian armies came, and as they carried Israel away, or were in the process of carrying Israel away, they surrounded Judah and began to taunt him. They began to pressure him. They began to bring every lie and circumstance against him to intimidate him, to pressure him into making league with the devil. They tried to pressure him into surrendering to the satanic attack, giving up, quitting. And we read that in 2 Kings. I can find it here. Chapter 18, beginning with verse 17. The king of Assyria, as was his custom, used the past mighty victories that he had to pressure up-and-coming cities and nations into surrendering. That was a quick way to win. And they brought a lot of pressure on them, an argument to get them to surrender. Saves a lot of wear and tear on the army. And they came up in verse 17, appointed demons come to persuade him to surrender in his trial. I want you to know that Assyria was an ominous foe, and Israel had no power against them. And Judah was strong and walking with God, but in the natural, they were no match for Assyria. And verse 18, when they had called to the king, he sent out certain ones to converse with them. And they said, verse 19, speak to Hezekiah. What confidence is this wherein thou trustest? Thou sayest, and they're just vain words, I have counsel and strength for war. Now on whom dost thou trust that thou rebellest against me? He's saying, you're trusting in yourself. That's what you're trusting in. They weren't. Honestly, they were trusting in God. They said, verse 20, when you're trusting in Egypt, that's what you're trusting in. They weren't trusting in Egypt. Not this time. They had in the past, but not this time. And Egypt truly is a bruised reed, represents the world. If you lean on it, it just pierces your hand. A reed was a very poor staff or a thing to lean on because it would splinter. It looked strong, but it had a breaking point, and then it would pierce you, break into fragments. Verse 22, if you say we trust in God, has not God delivered all his high places into my hand? Or is not he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah hath taken away, has said unto Judah in Jerusalem, ye shall worship before the altar in Jerusalem? Have you not offended God by pulling down all those idols, all those altars to false gods? The devil's trying to attack you with all kinds of things. First, he attacks you for trusting in something you're not trusting in. Try to confuse you. Then he tries to say, you haven't done God's will. You've been missing God's will. And in that hour, sounds, and the circumstances, my friend, can illustrate these things. Verse 23, make a league with us. Make a pledge with us. Give pledges. Verse 24, how wilt thou turn away the face of one captain, of the least of my master's servants? You won't have a chance against this demonic onslaught. Am I now come up without the Lord against this place to destroy it? The Lord said to me, go up to this land and destroy it. This is God's will. Surrender. And they came back to the king and told him, and they said, don't speak to us in the Israelite language. Speak to us only in the Syrian language. We understand that. We don't want all the men on the wall and the soldiers to overhear this conversation, lest they be totally intimidated and lose faith in Hezekiah and hope. Verse 27, Rabshakeh said unto them, hath my master sent me to thy master and to thee to speak these words? Hath he not sent me to the men that sit on the wall, that they may eat their own dung? Are not they the ones that are going to be ground into the dirt as Assyria tramples your city over underfoot? Hear the word of the great king, Satan. Thus saith Satan, let not your pastor deceive you. He shall not be able to deliver you out of his hand. Neither shall let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord will deliver us. Verse 31, hearken not to Hezekiah or the word of God. Make a league with me. Compromise. Give in. Give up. Quit. Make a league with me, and every man shall eat of his own fig tree, verse 32, until I come and take you away to a land likened to your own land. I'm going to come and take you away. Beware. Verse 33, hath any of the gods of the nations delivered at all his land out of the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are all these gods that your God should deliver you? Verse 36, the people held their peace and answered him not a word. For the king's commandment was saying, don't dialogue with the devil, hang up. Hezekiah was under tremendous pressure as the leader of the nation. And to compound the problem, we read in 2 Kings chapter 20, in those days Hezekiah was sick unto death. I do not know the cause of the sickness other than it was a deadly boil from which the poison entered his entire system and he was going to die. The Syrian army lay on the doorstep, and it was a troublous time. And here comes the prophet, verse 1, thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, thou shalt die and not live. That man was in a trial. He turned his face to the wall and prayed. Things looked bad. I beseech thee, O Lord, remember your covenant. I have walked with integrity before you. I've stood, I've walked. I've done that which is good in thy sight. This is not bragging, my friend. This is claiming the promise. The promise is unto you. He wept sore. It came to pass that Hezekiah, that Isaiah said unto him, Behold, I have seen thy tears, verse 5. I will heal thee on the third day. Thou shalt go up to the house of the Lord. I'm giving you 15 years more to live. And I will deliver thee and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria. Now Hezekiah learned some things from this trial. Came to the cross. Came to the cross. And we read that over in Isaiah. Verse 38, chapter 38. Verse 10. Isaiah 38, verse 10. I said, in the cutting off of my days, I shall go down to the gates of the grave. I'm deprived of the residue of my years. I'm only 39 years old. Going to death. I said, I shall not see the Lord in the land of the living. I shall behold man no more with the inhabitants of the world. Mine age is departed, is removed from me as a shepherd's tent. I have cut off like a weaver my life. He will cut me off with pining sickness. From day even to night wilt thou make an end of me. Complaining, living in the circumstance, but he came to the cross, as it were. And in verse 15, he says, What shall I say? What has happened? What is the conclusion? What have I learned? He hath both spoken unto me and himself hath done it. I will go softly all my years in the bitterness of my soul. I'll walk carefully, humbly, and contritely before God. And verse 16 is what I was getting at. O Lord, by these things men live, and in all these things is the life of my spirit. In these trials, in these pressures, in these calamities, men live. Because their priorities are put into focus, and indeed, all the things they live for in self have been removed far from them. There was no self left when the Assyrians surrounded the nation. And when Hezekiah faced death and got by the voice of God, you are all done. My friend, there was no pleasure left in that hour. He came to the cross. I mean, that was it. His life was gone. And he came to the revelation, which you shall come to by God's grace, if God allow this in your life, which I believe is His will. By these things men live. Lord, by these things I am enabled to see the heavenly perspective. To see what your will is, and that it is not all the things of this earth. It is not all of those things that I'm so interested in. All the things that I live for, those are nothing. In these things is the life of my spirit. God allows these things that we might live. Psalms 119 and verse 71. It is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes. Take hope in your circumstance and in your trial. He sees you there. Be careful how you live. And above all, not my will, but thine be done. God bless you. Now, God is setting before us such marvelous things. Such marvelous things. And He wants us to be taking hope. He really does. And if you feel a condemnation or
kind of like a pressure upon you that these things that are being preached are negative and they're unnecessary for this time. The enemy is clouding your mind, because the sermon Friday night and then this Sunday school lesson, they're not negative at all. They're not negative. And I believe they really are truly the heart of God to us. And He's trying to say some very important, necessary things in this hour because of what He wants to do. See, God is looking all over the world for a people, all over the world. And He's looking all over this congregation for a people. He wants a certain kind of people, and they're hard to find. They're very hard to find. And with the way things are done in the average church, in the average move of God, there's not that much commitment. There's not that much dedication. There's not that much challenge. There's not that much teaching. There's very, very little depth at all. Very little. You can't get the people to sacrifice hardly a thing. They'll sacrifice based on, it's an investment program. They'll give to certain churches because it's been taught and instilled in them that if they give 10, they'll get 100 back. If they give 20, they'll get 200 back. And that is what happens in some churches. Not all of them, of course. I'm just speaking about those where that is happening. I'm not trying to label all churches in this way. I would never even think to try to do such a thing. I'd never want to do such a thing. It would be completely out of the realm of reality. But it does happen. And see, this is where people end up doing things that look good, and they have a good overall spiritual appearance. But it's not done on the right principles. It's not done on the right basis. And God is wanting to get us somewhere on the right principles, on the right basis, based on His Word, based on what He is really saying, not what confused people are saying, or people that unfortunately are being duped by demons or carnality or something else to this effect. And so God, as He is looking upon us and He's wanting to accomplish these marvelous things, He then has to, and this is the second thing, He has to show us how to do it. He has to give us the way for it to be accomplished. And so that's why in this hour, we need to be praying, saying, Lord, give me ears to hear what the Spirit is saying unto the church. Lord, help me to really hear what You're saying. See, there's such a multitude of voices. Such a multitude of voices. And people are listening to pastors on the radio, and they're reading all sorts of Christian magazines and booklets. And so they end up kind of hearing all these voices. And then when it comes right down to the church that they're in, sometimes they're not even able to hear their own pastor. So we need to be careful who we're listening to. And we need to make sure that there's not demons blocking our minds, or demons of misunderstanding or confusion or criticalness that would keep us from really hearing. When God says, this is what I want to do, then the second part is, well, how do we implement it? What are the steps that will bring this into reality? And so right now, I believe that God is showing us the very pathway. And the pathway is the cross. It's always the cross. The pathway is holiness. The pathway is obedience. The pathway is full surrender. It never changes. The path never changes. It's never that He substitutes it with something else. It's always the same. But we need to hear the Lord speaking so we know how to put those things into motion at this particular point. We could see how to do it back here, and we saw that it was these things, but we needed Him to teach us how to do it right there regarding that particular move of His Spirit. Well, now we're with a new wave of God's Spirit. And so now He has to show us that same path, but how to implement it right now. That's what He's doing. And that's because He loves us. And it's such a wonderful thing to know that God is giving these messages, and that God has put a government over us to protect us and to lead us. Oh, my brother, what safety. My sister, what a marvelous thing. This is hard to find upon planet Earth. There are very few churches where you can really see a people that have a government over them and they can trust in that government and know that it's for the saving of their soul. That is a tremendous thing. Tremendous thing. See, we have to remember what fellowship has light with dark. And as Lanny was bringing out this morning, we could say, what fellowship hath selfishness with unselfishness? And so, if we're wanting this next wave of the Spirit, and the motive is selfishness, but you're going to be having fellowship with the unselfish one, how can such a thing be? See, it's incongruous. It doesn't line up. It won't work. And so he's having to bring us to the necessary commitments so that we can move into this thing. And my brother, we're going to move into it. And we are moving into it. And God has he's got a vista out here, and he's going to move us into it, and you will be thankful all the days of your life. Now see, the bottom line is, turn your eyes to Jesus. Just right in this hour, turn your eyes to Jesus. Lord, I just give you my whole life. And you've got to be putting the past behind you, the failings, the weaknesses. You've got to be standing against the demons of condemnation, discouragement, the lying emotions. This is what we've got to be doing. It's very important in this hour. And we've got to go on in His grace and in His mercy and in His forgiveness. And we've got to believe Him that He knows right where we are. And He really knows what we need. And He will meet those needs. But we've got to come to Him and just give ourselves. And that's what we're wanting to do. And that's what we're desiring to do. And it's not that we haven't heard this before, but there's times that the Spirit moves to bring these things to our remembrance so that we can once again have our attention focused on that which is really important. Sometimes the enemy is able to bring things to people's minds and they kind of feel like, well, aren't we beyond this? Haven't we left this message already? I mean, the pastor dealt with this during deliverance, and it was a major thing in deliverance, coming to the cross. Well, this is another wave, and we've got to come to the same cross. We've got to keep on that same foundation. And the devil knows how to move us off these foundations. He knows how to get our lives so that we begin to erect them on that which is the sifting and shifting sand. He knows exactly how to do that. He's very skilled at it. But the Lord, He looks down and He sees us moving off maybe a little bit. And He just says, my son, right back over here. My daughter, it's over here. Here's the rock. Here's the foundation. And I'll tell you what this should do in your heart. And if it's not, you need to rebuke the devil. Because these messages, they're to bring you hope. And they're to cause you to see, yes, Jesus is giving us direction. And He wouldn't be taking time to give us this kind of direction if it wasn't going to head us to the right location, if it wasn't going to get us to the goal. And it's just important that each one of us just keep open before the Lord, just keep trusting Him, just keep believing Him. And that's the essence of the sermon that I have this morning. And I feel like as I was praying and believing God for a message, and then as I was praying for Lanny, and I just said, Lord, help him to really give something from your heart. Help him, oh God, to give something that is really coming from you to help us. And I believe that that's exactly what the Lord has done this morning. So be encouraged in God. Be encouraged. Just keep trusting Him. Know that He sees all that's taking place. He sees all that is transpiring. And He knows exactly how to work with it. He knows how to use these demons. He knows how to use this circumstance. He knows how to use this job situation. He knows how to use this problem here, this weakness here. He knows how to take all of that, my friend. And He's working with all of it. And He knows exactly how to use it to get you to that place where all that matters in this life is Jesus. All that matters is Him, and all that matters is pleasing Him. And then when that is being done, oh, the blessing that is returned, the glory that is bestowed, the joy, the love, and things can go on for a long time. There can be great difficulties. But you know what that tells me about this congregation? It tells me that God really sees that He has a people here that He can do something with. If you have a people and you can't really do anything with them, you got to keep stuffing candy in their mouth, you know? You got to keep giving them another dollar. You've got to keep always giving them a pat on the back. You've always got to keep carrying them along. You've always got to be right there and always wipe their tears and take care of their runny nose. Well, that's where people are. The Lord, He, in His mercy, He'll keep dealing with them because He's trying to get them to grow up. But I think God has found a people here, and He's found them in all sorts of other locations around the world where He's finding a people that are saying, I want God's will. And I want to be what Jesus wants me to be at all costs. And Lord, I know I don't even know what that means. And I know that I don't understand what that's going to involve. But Lord, I'm going to jump out of the boat. I'm going to just trust You somehow in all this. I know I'm saying a lot more than what I realize I'm saying. But I say, Lord, I really want to be a man of God. I almost feel like taping my mouth because, boy, I don't know what that's going to entail. I don't know the trials. I don't know some of the problems. But, oh, Lord, I do know one thing. You're good to Your people. And You're on their side. And we got all these examples of those that have walked with You. And all they can say, all that comes out of their mouths is, oh, it was wonderful. It was worth it. And that they would never turn to anything else. So that's what the Lord is doing in this. He loves you. He loves you. He's bringing understanding. He's bringing direction. Because He wants you to have fellowship with the Son. He wants you to have union with the Son. He wants you to experience the Word of God. You're going to. You're going to. And He's giving the pathway by which it's going to be done. Well, we'll take a 10-minute break.